I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Welcome to Sick Boy, a podcast where we talk about what it's like to be sick. This week's guest is Tanya. She has leukemia. Let's talk about it.
Oh, yes, I am ready.
Good, because we're recording.
Ready. You guys ready?
Are we ready? So
are
this
you ready?
Is the, okay. All right. No, Chris Angel. We'll leave that shit.
Are you ready?
So this is really exciting because we rarely, but it's kind of a treat for us to be able to sit down with a medical professional like yourself.
Thank you,
Tanya.
Yes.
Thanks for coming in. You are a doctor. But I want to say this before we start.
Like, the things that we say wrong will just be corrected in live in real time.
I know, which is amazing. But also, I want to make sure, because Tanya has some other shit to talk about. Not about, I mean, I'm sure you being a doctor plays a role in your story. However, we're here to talk about Tanya's sick, guys. So we're going to talk about that.
What?
Yeah. So I don't want us to get too caught up in like, hey, Tanya, I've got this weird lump on my, you know, on the shaft of my penis. Can you take a look at it? Brian, I know you were talking about that earlier. So we'll leave those questions till the end of the show.
Okay. Never mind. I'm not even going to engage with you.
Okay. So we'll leave all personal diagnoses questions until later. But for now.
Perfect. I've been building up those questions for like 7 years. So
I
can't wait.
But I don't have a personal diagnosis question, but I do have a question.
Have a story?
Well, it's not much of, I mean, most of the listeners have heard the story before, but for Tanya's sake, I do have a question that I've been trying to resolve.
Wait, are you doing it now?
Because you
just said that we were going to save all that until the end of the show.
Yeah, that was literally what he just said.
But you said questions about specific diagnosis. I need to know this right now.
I should have been more specific. Yeah. Okay. Go for it, Brian.
Okay. So, Tanya, really quick, I had my appendix removed, but when I went into the hospital, I didn't have my health card, so I used my twin brother's health card.
Oh, that's not a good idea.
Yeah. So now,
no shit.
So the hospital. This was
not smart.
Okay. This was 10 years ago, and
you've grown since then.
It wasn't smart then either.
Well, no. Well, yeah. It's never a smart decision.
I support it, to be totally honest.
But so the hospital, I guess, thinks that my brother doesn't have an appendix, but they think that I still do. How do I fix that?
You probably want to let the appropriate people know in medical records that it was you.
Mm. Who are those people, though? Like, what is there?
I don't
a phone
think it's
number
a
you just call up?
I don't think Tanya's the right person to ask.
I definitely can't help you with that because I can't get your appendix back and take your brother's away
and make it right.
I bet you know those
only the administrators can.
You know when you walk into the hospital?
They're in a room somewhere.
Mm-hmm. You know when you walk into the hospital and there's that like little kiosk? And
kiosk.
And there's always like, you know, like an 80-year-old man and a 75-year-old woman sitting behind there, and they're just knitting, and they're so sweet. I bet you if you called them...
I don't spend enough time in hospitals, I guess.
Really? The information desk?
I don't know those characters.
Oh, man.
I mean, I know the information desk.
Everything.
They know every fucking thing.
I just don't know the old characters that are sitting there. I didn't know that it was like those were the staple type of character that sits at the information desk.
Oh, dude, you'll never see an information desk person under the age of 98.
But my problem is the people at the information desk, they don't have a computer with like access to data.
No, because they're old people. Got filing cabinets.
In their head. In their head. They're like your super smart grandma.
It's where all the information went before we invented computers.
Well, I guess
You got something else to add?
No, I don't have much more to add. I just want to say like
what
again,
other sins have you committed?
If you're a listener and you're like, geez, Brian, it's very simple to resolve your issue. All you'd need to do is call this phone number, and tell this person.
I think someone has said something on those.
No,
lines.
No, they haven't. They haven't given specific direction.
Did you walk in here thinking that you were going to have the answer to your problem solved tonight?
I did, yeah. I did.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the mystery continues.
Well, I guess, you know what? If we can find out about my problem, then maybe we can just find out more about Tanya's.
Oh. I think that's a fucking great segue, Brian. Tanya, why don't you tell... So you're a doctor.
I am a doctor.
What kind of doctor are you?
Family doctor.
Okay, sweet. Nice.
You're in high demand.
Yeah.
In Nova Scotia,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, for
yes.
sure.
I'd charge people a lot if I was in that high demand. Just saying.
Okay.
Supply and demand.
What do you charge, Tanya?
We can't charge a thing, which is probably why there's nobody here working as family
God,
doctors.
We need to open up the free market. We need... to get
Donald Trump in here.
We need Donald Trump in here to fix it up.
Oh, no.
We need to privatize everything.
Oh, no, no, no. Well, Tanya, you're technically not practicing right now, right?
Nope, I'm not practicing. I haven't practiced for quite a while, actually.
Yeah, because you've got a bit of a boo-boo.
Yeah, a boo-boo in my blood.
Yeah, yeah, it's like the biggest boo-boo you can get in your blood, I think.
Oh, like leukemia?
You got it.
You fucking nailed it.
Whoa,
dude.
Really?
You nailed it. Yeah.
Look at me.
Yeah.
I should be a doctor.
What were the other things that were floating around in your head there, Brian, that you were trying to decide between before you said leukemia?
No, I just knew. My intuition, she said blood. You know, I thought, well, if it's bad, it's got to be leukemia.
Right.
What other blood disorders are there?
Dude, there's probably a lot.
Do we know?
Let's hear them.
Is AIDS one?
Is AIDS a blood disorder?
Tanya, you're looking at me like I know the answer.
Yeah, well, you knew the answer.
yeah, right. Yeah, Bri. What else is there?
That's literally the only thing he knows.
There's a lot of blood disorders, and they kind of vary based on your age or based on genetics, based on a whole bunch of different parameters that they find in your blood or your bone marrow. Right.
Would leukemia be classified as a blood disorder? Would it be in that category?
It's a blood cancer.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's a cancer of your blood, essentially. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when were you diagnosed?
So February 3rd, 2017, so last year, almost 2 years ago, on the 19th anniversary of the day my mom died.
Whoa.
Which was really...
That's
terrible.
A heavy day.
The universe just shit on me that day.
How did your mom die?
She died when I was 15 because of suicide.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Holy moly. And for you, was that date every year like really a really tough date for you? Or, you know, you're into your older age, was it more of a sort of...
It was more of a celebration.
Yeah.
I think it has to be, really. You can you can dwell on it, and you can always remember people or special events that happen on a day. But for me, it was a celebration of the years that I had with my mom. She was a really awesome person. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, around what part of the day did you find out you had leukemia?
It was very early in the morning, and interestingly, I had an appointment to see a hematologist who's a blood doctor. Mm-hmm. And
familiar.
Yeah.
Familiar.
Yes. And
which isn't the case for all things.
No, so. Not all things. No. I had come into the clinic, which I didn't know what clinic I was going to because I didn't know my diagnosis. And I went in and I was speaking with a nurse and he said, oh, welcome to the lymphoma leukemia clinic. And I was like, oh.
Oh,
I guess I have leukemia.
Oh,
whoa, hold on. Can you just back that up just 1 second?
Yeah.
And you're in there, you're talking to somebody and then you basically find out that you have leukemia because they say, welcome to the leukemia department?
The clinic. So I was at a clinic on a specific day for specific disorders of the blood.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't know that I was being formally diagnosed that day.
Whoa.
Holy fuck. That was really
Now,
terrible.
As a doctor, were you like, oh, yep, I got leukemia? Or were you like, oh, does this maybe...
I knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we all learn a lot about our bodies. Like we learn what kind of food doesn't make us feel good, what makes us tick, what makes us jive. And we also know when things just aren't working.
Right.
And I had some enlarged lymph nodes, which we all get when we have a cold or a flu. Mm-hmm. And mine were kind of sticking around. And I'm a big runner and they were getting worse when I ran.
Mm. Right.
But I didn't for sure know I would have leukemia because I was so healthy. And
was the doctor saying that? Was that a bit of like a faux pas?
Well, it was a nurse actually who was just doing like a preliminary screen, coming in and saying, have you had this and this? Welcome to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Clinic.
Right.
Like, oh, okay.
Wow. Yeah. I'm like Taylor. you're the type of person who, when you experience symptoms of something, you just like brush them off and would like very rarely ever think too seriously about like going to get something checked out.
Well, like when it happens, but like if it persisted, I would go.
Dude, so, yeah, but like, but also hold on.
Yeah.
when it happens, but even when it happens, when it's like, when I hear it, I go, holy shit, dude, were you with anyone? Like, are you okay now? You know, like things like, dude, there was a time where you were like, yeah, I, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you described how you went into the bathroom and you violently threw up. Or did you shit yourself? You were shitting. It was one or the other. And then you passed out. And then
I used the word like passed out to describe I was so fatigued that I fell asleep.
Because you were puking or shitting, one or the other.
Definitely not puking. I never puke.
So you were shitting so hard that you passed out afterwards.
Yeah.
Woke up a couple hours later and were like,
after, hours?
No. Like,
yeah. Like you woke
seconds?
Up like it was
five
no,
minutes.
A week later.
It was like a couple days.
Yeah.
You were out.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And then you didn't do anything about it.
But the problem never persisted.
Okay. So, but there, I was actually leading into something with that. Like, so Tanya, being a doctor at the time, like, were the symptoms like the swollen lymph nodes and things like that? Was that what encouraged you to go and like get checked out?
That was exactly. But I had been checked out about 5 months prior when I did have the lymph nodes in my neck and they were fine. I was told it was okay. So I kind of carried on for a few months. And even if you are a physician, when we call it like a superior physician or a specialist, you know, they look down on the ivory tower. They're better than you.
Right.
They have more training than you. Tells you you're okay. You think you're okay. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what patients think when their family doctor says you're okay.
Oh, 100%
that's what people think. I'm okay. Yeah, and that's the mindset I was in. And I went along and ran a marathon, came home and was like, oh.
Was there a part of you that was going, that was seeing some of these symptoms like your lymph nodes? Because I don't know what any symptoms are for anything. So are you seeing these and going, I wonder. I mean,
I know where you're going with, like with WebMD.
Right, exactly. How somebody might see symptoms and go on the internet, you're going into your brain.
Yeah, I went into my brain.
Because you've been trained to do that for other people. So are you doing that? Are you thinking, I wonder what that is? I wonder, and is that something that as a doctor you do on like a super regular basis whenever you feel anything that's not your baseline normal?
Yeah. And I also called my smartest friend from medical school and was like, what's your differential for this? And we went online and we did our differentials and she's like,
which is doc lingo for
what are your ideas for what this could be?
Okay.
Give me your greatest idea and bear it down for me and be honest,
right?
Because you don't want them to, you know,
what did they say?
Sugarcoat it for you.
Oh, she said, I think you have leukemia or lymphoma.
Oh shit.
Holy fuck, she said that.
So she nailed it.
How long before you got the diagnosis was that?
It was probably only about a week or two prior.
Now, when she said that, as a physician and as a human, were you like, were you freaking out or were you like, you're probably right?
I was of the latter. I was like, yes, I think you're right. And I was very calm. I was not afraid. And I thought, well, this really sucks. Like, I've had a lot of adversity and I really wasn't looking forward to this, but I thought she was right.
Do you think you were calm because you're a physician?
No, I think I was calm because of the person that I am. But I think being a physician contributed to not, you know, being hyper-vigilant and very, you know, I wasn't scared.
Yeah. See, I suppose because, like, if you are, like, for myself, I'm not a physician, and I don't know the first thing about leukemia or any cancer, really. Like, I mean, aside from the anecdotal stuff that we've heard on here, but...
Well, why would you?
Because it's not part of my life.
Right.
And so if someone today was like, hey, Jer, you have leukemia, man, I would be like... Holy fucking shit. What does that mean? The unknown would be so deafening.
The unknown is the hardest part of any disease, though.
Sure, of course. But as a physician, there's a lot of that unknown is kind of like, is not so much unknown because you've at least, you have a language or you have this education that has, afforded you this ability to kind of know what to expect. Like, what's
in a lot of ways, for sure. But I will say, this is very eerie. In my last year of medical school, before I wrote my board exams, on my wall, I had this big poster of all the different types of leukemia because I was terrified I would get leukemia one day.
Whoa.
And I just couldn't learn the facts.
Why were you? Why were you afraid? I mean,
because it was one of those things that couldn't be cured. And most cancers, you know, you can cut out the organ or you can treat the organ and feel like you're cancer-free. But with blood cancers, you're never cancer-free. You're in remission until it comes back, right, or until you have a bone marrow transplant.
Oh, I've never known that. I've never actually thought about it that way. That makes a lot of sense.
Then if you said, like, pretty, like, confidently that it wasn't the fact that you were a physician that made you kind of have that more nonchalant, I guess, response to figuring out that you had leukemia, then what is it that, like, what do you think it is that makes you have that more kind of, like, relaxed response to that?
I don't know if it's relaxed, but for me, more so not surprised. Like, okay. I've had a lot of bad news bared to me over the years and over my lifetime, and I think when somebody said, you have leukemia, I was like, oh,
of course.
Okay,
I do.
Thanks.
Yeah, like, right. Just another.
And it was just another hurdle I was going to have to get over somehow over time and deal with and kind of bring the troops in and get all of my friends and family to help me through.
As a physician, are you able to? So you talk to your friend and they're like, I think you have, you know what? Just being honest, I think it's leukemia or it could be leukemia.
Yep.
Are you able to go, and maybe this is like a medical system question, if you go into the hospital and you go, hey, I'm a physician, I think I might have leukemia, I talked about it with another physician who I trust,
sure,
and they also think that I have leukemia, like, test me now, like, is that, are they going, okay, that makes sense. There's a higher likelihood that you're making it easier for me to get to the problem.
Or is it what I feel like most doctors probably think when someone comes in and goes, listen, doc, here's all the things that I feel. I looked it up on WebMD,
and
this is what I think I have. And then the doctor looks at you and goes, man, let me do my fucking job.
Dude, you know what I just, guys, I thought of that. Right before I came here, I was fixing a friend of mine's bike. And I got to this point where I was trying to fix something, and I went, oh, fuck. I think it's this problem, and I don't know how to fix that. So I said, what I recommend you do is I think you should take it, go to the bike shop, and I know where the problem is, so you can tell them that you know that it's there and that you think it might be this because I'm telling you I think it might be this. So tell them that, and so they'll know to look there and not waste their time looking elsewhere. And as soon as I said that, I was like, man, I feel like some bike mechanic would just be like,
Shut up. Let me do my job.
One of your friends who tinkers with bikes thought it was this. Like, fuck that guy. You know, I'll let me go in here and figure this out because that's my fucking
job. We do get that a lot.
Especially as a family physician.
Google has just destroyed us. Yeah. That doctor of Google is the worst.
Yeah, with people coming in thinking that they know
what
they
have. But if you are wondering, there isn't a room with, like, shiny white stools that doctors line up at, you know, when they think they have something wrong. That doesn't really happen. And I think, too, you don't really want to know that this is the truth.
Right.
You may think it is, but it takes a lot of courage to go to your doctor knowing you know the symptoms that are presenting and to say, like, hey, this is what I think is going on. Mm-hmm. And I actually didn't do that because I didn't want to narrow down the diagnosis to my doctor. I wanted to make it more wide open. And,
like, leave
and
room
let,
for, like, maybe it's something else. Like, like, maybe they'll do other tests and it'll be that instead of this.
That's what you're hoping.
Right.
Sure.
This question, maybe you shouldn't answer it. But I have a question about if you and I both happen to walk into the ER at the same time and you and I are showing about the same symptoms, similar kind of thing. Like, we haven't been shot by a gun or anything like that. We both have, like, a very intense abdominal cramps. And then in the triage part, you're like, also, I'm a physician. And then I'm like, also, I'm
a clown.
A clown. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, good. And then we go and sit down.
Practicing
do you get,
clown.
Do you get in quicker than me?
I hope not.
Okay.
I feel like you just get rolled up into the system like everybody else. I mean, I would like to imagine that, but maybe, I don't know, maybe not.
Maybe not.
It's hard to know because for the times that I have presented, they've been pretty urgent. Like the two times I've presented to the emergency room in the past 5 months have been pretty life-threatening.
Oh,
so
yeah?
I was in within 10 minutes.
Why life-threatening?
So the last two admissions I've had were for something called febrile neutropenia, which is...
Oh, no. Oh, I know.
Oh, you know? Yeah,
no, I'm just...
Tell us.
No, you
No.
I have no idea.
Can you say,
that was
say it one more time?
I think that was Mandarin.
I believe it was febrile neutropenia.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Jesus Christ, Brian.
So you're going to Google
was it. Was it?
But it's when you have a low neutrophil count. So that's the cells that fight infection.
Why am I Googling
you get fevers.
It? You're here.
I can tell you maybe tell faster than you can click. But that's what happens. So you get fevers, really high fevers, when you have really low cell counts that fight infection because of chemo. And I've been on chemo for the past 5 months. So
right. You
can't fight any infection because you have no cells to do so. And then you get these crazy high fevers and you're in sweats and...
So, like, the danger there lies within the fever itself.
Yeah, because you've got an underlying infection typically causing the fever, and the danger is not assessing the infection, and you have no cells to fight it, so you can die.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
we've skipped ahead a little bit in terms of that, but that's okay. That's great. When you find out that you've got chemo, as you said, February 2017, What's the action items that you're going? We need to get these ducks in a row. Like, did chemo happen right away? Did treatment happen right away, or was there a buffer? What was the deal there?
It's a very good question because for a lot of leukemias, especially in our age group, they would be acute, acute or quickly, rapidly progressing disorders, which means you get sick really quick and you need treatment quickly in order to preserve your life. For me, I somehow got a leukemia that's mostly in people over 65. So there are probably, I only know three of us under 50 in the Atlantic provinces that have the type of leukemia that I have. And what happens with mine's a chronic leukemia, so it slowly progresses over time rather than an acute, which quickly happens. You watch and you wait basically for the wheels to fall off of your body, and then you treat.
Jesus, that sounds
It has been
awful.
An awful year and a half. So I got diagnosed February 2017, and I should have started chemo June 1st of this year, but I actually was delayed by a month because
June 1st of this year?
I just started chemo, yeah.
So yeah. The 5 months that you said you're on chemo,
now.
That's just now?
Yeah, now.
Well, okay,
holy
so
shit,
what's really
crazy.
Interesting is you don't look like a cancer patient.
That is the biggest insult. Not rudely insult, but let me just like educate a little
totally.
Bit.
Mm-hmm.
So people always associate chemo with baldness or losing your hair and looking really thin.
Yeah. But, or like really white or like ghostly.
And that is like, there's a look, it's called cachexia with cancer, or like really thin and wasted and you look unwell, malnourished.
Mm-hmm. Cachexia?
That's what it's called. Like
cachexia
is an appearance and
like when you look
wasting,
that way, that like, quote unquote
sure.
way.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Not every chemo for every cancer causes you to lose your hair or become really, really thin.
Yeah, we've met a couple people that in the span of the show who didn't fall with under that like cachexia.
Well, yeah.
My mom actually didn't, but she was supposed to. They told her like 98% chance you'll lose your hair. Like don't plan on keeping it. And
she, as a woman,
she kept it.
When you can keep your hair,
it was a huge
it is so
win
huge.
For her.
And I thought I was going to definitely lose mine. Not many people thought I would, but one nurse right before I started chemo was like, "Are you prepared to lose all your hair?" And I was like,
"You're like, oh fuck."
No,
what?
I was like,
"You're
well,
like,
I'm not, but I guess I am tomorrow." Like, and I didn't. I've thinned quite a bit, but I have. It's not noticeable to the general public. And, you know, they prepare you for all these things that are going to happen that may not. I mean, for 1 week of every month, I can't eat and I'm super sick. But then the 3 weeks after that, I just eat everything and gain all the weight back. So
is
I don't
that, is
look.
That, is the like, not eating from the
nausea?
From the nausea. Okay.
It is awful.
Now, do you use THC or
I use CBD.
CBD. Okay.
Yeah.
My mom said, like, again, like she said, That was a game miracle. Changer for
her. It's a game changer.
Yeah, it was.
I didn't get nausea right away with my chemo, and so I was like, oh yeah, I'm good. I haven't lost my hair. And then when I was admitted to hospital with my first infection, it was about 4 days in, and all of a sudden I just got profound nausea. I hadn't eaten in days, and I had taken all of these pharmaceutical drugs that gave so many complications. And then somebody just suggested CBD, and I was like, yeah, fine. I'll try anything. And it took about 3 hours, and I was hungry, and I had no nausea, and I was fine.
It's
amazing.
What are some of the ones that they give you for nausea, like intravenously? I've had does it start with a Z?
Zofran?
Zofran.
Yes.
Man, that shit sucked.
Yeah, you get really bad constipation.
Yeah.
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 For all of you.
Shit for a long time.
Just so you know, yeah.
Zofran.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And then that leads to problems.
My mom had to take a lot of Senecot.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I've had some Senecot myself.
Senecot. Some of that natural shit, you know what I'm saying?
Just to go back a little bit, you said that like you had to wait until the wheels started to fall off. And then you mentioned that you started your training. So, your
training.
I'm always training.
you started your chemo.
Yeah.
What was starting to happen that
Brian's that fresh from the gym.
Mr. fucking CrossFit over here.
Brian's fresh from the gym.
Yeah, I know.
It's just all over his mind.
He's like, you need to get back to the gym, Tanya. Look at you.
Yeah. Hey, I can write you a training program.
How many wads did you get that
please
week
do.
That the wheels fell off?
Jared, I was listening to Termion. You want to start coming to the gym or what?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. Okay. I don't know. We'll talk later.
Okay.
Did he say he was going to go to the gym?
No, he didn't.
No, I didn't think he did.
No, I didn't.
So what were some of the signs that like now was the time to start?
Yeah, so I lost about 5 kilograms in weight in about 4 months, which I'm not a huge person, so that was quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And then I started waking up in the middle of the night really, really sweaty, like very sweaty, almost a menopausal sweat, I guess some women would say. But I was drenched, and that was new and very profound. And then my lymph nodes were getting a lot bigger. And you could look at me and see really large lymph nodes in my neck and my head. It was...
Were you in pain or discomfort at that time?
Never.
Too?
I've never had any pain.
Really?
Never. No. They're uncomfortable for me if I was to lay on my ear, because you have lymph nodes in places you'd never know you have them.
Yeah, you said your head, and I was like, wait, where are the lymph nodes growing out of your head?
Yeah.
I feel them, like, when I get sick, I feel them on the back. I feel
the base
ones
of your
back
skull
of my neck,
or the back of your neck?
I always feel it here under my neck.
Those are the most common ones for viral infections.
Those ones.
Yeah, those ones.
Those are the ones that everyone likes to hear.
So where are the ones on the back, like behind your ear?
Yep, you've got some there, behind your ear.
Like right in there, you've got some.
That little bone behind your ear.
That's where mine swell up.
You've got lymph nodes there.
Oh, that's why when I sit down, the doctor goes, I thought they were always just, I don't know, just greeting me. It's a weird doctor's greet where they reach around with their hands and they just kind of like...
It's a traditional...
Just grab your occipital ridge
physician.
And just like kind of feel your ears.
They're actually doing something.
Oh, I just thought they were saying hi.
No.
Interesting. Huh. I was like, you doctors, you weird alien type people. That's the weirdest handshake I've ever felt in my life.
It's a brother and sisterhood. Yes.
It's something like that.
So Tanya, how many, you started chemo 5 months ago now?
So I should have started June.
But you started July.
But I started in July because they found a lesion in my lung, which we still don't know what it is, but we're just watching it.
Has it grown? Has it changed?
It's staying the same size.
Okay. Well, that's probably a good thing.
It's probably
thing, right?
good because if it was this something long. Infectious or scary, it would have grown by now.
So someone with like one of the slower kind of leukemia, how many rounds of chemo do you need to go through? How do they monitor that?
That's a good question. Very good. I should have had 6 rounds of chemo, but my chemo was cut off 2 weeks ago. I was in hospital again with another febrile fevers infection episode, and my bone marrow just wasn't recovering after my 5th round of chemo. So we decided to call chemo quits because I wasn't going to recover and I would keep getting sick. I was too immune suppressed.
It was doing more damage than it was.
Well, it was probably done what it was supposed to do because they thought possibly I'm in an early remission.
That's awesome news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
This fibroneutropenia.
Febrile neutropenia.
Febrile neutropenia.
Yes.
So, when you go into the hospital, how do they, and you get admitted,
yeah.
What are they doing? Like, what are they doing to mitigate that?
So the first thing you do is you hand them this yellow card that you're given the first day of your chemo. When you're told you're having chemo, you go to this education session. They say, if you ever get a fever at home, you bring this yellow card with you. So I bring my yellow card.
It's like your golden ticket.
It's like your ticket.
In.
You give it to triage. They're like, okay, you're in.
There you go.
And they take your temperature, and then it's so quick. And
now,
then
what does this yellow card look like? And what's it made of? And what's
it's laminated.
It?
It's laminated. Perfect. It's laminated. About 10 font times New Roman, perfect. Probably, or maybe Calibri. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Very, very good detail.
Yes, yes. Bold at times.
Okay, perfect,
and
perfect.
Bulleted yeah. for the practitioner, not for the patient. So it says, this is what you give. So you give really potent antibiotics, the most potent known to mankind, which isn't a good...
Oh, yeah? What are they called?
It's called PIP-TAZ.
PIP-TAZ.
Yeah.
I've never had PIP-TAZ.
That's the abbreviation. And so it's the most potent antibiotic that can... treat the most broad spectrum of infections, because you just want to treat everything you can with one drug when someone comes in that sick.
Oh,
you don't want to give like an easy penicillin because that's not going to treat things that are in your belly.
Give me an example of like some other people that might go to the ER and they go, get them the PIP-TAZ.
So anyone really who's supremely immune suppressed,
right?
Or say if you have sepsis and you don't know, or like an infection in your blood and you don't know why, and you're getting more and more sick by the minute.
Okay. Like really intense.
It's real. You got to be sick to get this
really
stuff.
Strong, like blanket thing where they're like, we just give them this and it's almost certain to fucking do it.
And it pretty much will, unless you have had it a few times in your life and you develop a resistance to that antibiotic, which really sucks.
Dude, how crazy is that we do that?
It sucks.
I should probably wait until the end, but whatever, I'm fucking in it now. I chronically take azithromycin.
Yes.
Every day.
Mm-hmm.
How does my body not just go, all right, we're done, like, we're done with the azithromycin. It's not going to do anything else anymore.
It could someday.
It could?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like I take it so much.
And I take, I was taking an antibiotic every single day, twice a day, until I had a reaction to that. So now I take this inhaled drug once a month at the respiratory clinic.
Sweet. Which one?
It's called pentamidine.
I never had that one either.
Neither. I hadn't even heard of it.
Pentamidine.
Yeah, it's real fancy, and it tastes horrific.
You know what? It blows my mind that
I try Jer's drugs every now and again from his thing.
I wish you guys knew me when I was.
What's it called? I wanted to call it a diffuser, not a diffuser.
My nebulizer.
Your nebulizer. I try it every so often because I'm like, because when we travel, you know, he has to do his treatment in the morning and at night and nebulize like, well, it's like
Ventolin, hypertonic saline, and now Pulmazyme.
Hypertonic saline is literally just like water and salt,
it's
right?
Salt water.
And I remember you were doing that one because I think that's really the only one that I can try.
I could try the other ones, but
it wouldn't do anything except for just not do anything.
Ventolin make you probably a better biker.
A little
biker,
shaky. Maybe a little
cyclist.
Shaky.
Yeah, that's right. Well, there was a big scandal in the bike.
You take a lot of his enzymes, too, sometimes.
Well, when I have a particularly harsh meal that doesn't agree with me.
I don't know if we should be saying this in front of a doctor right now.
Well, they're just digestive
feels
enzymes.
Feels naughty.
Let all of your sins out. I've already heard them.
I've had it maybe a couple times. The first time I took your
enzymes
was when we went. It was Burger Week in Halifax. We went to
What
was that spot that we went to?
I don't know.
The Kangaroo Burger place.
Yeah, yeah. Was it?
The
Hole in the Wall.
The Press Gang.
Press Gang.
Yeah,
that's nice. The Hole in the Wall.
Hole in the Wall. One Press Gang, which places. Is like it's like it's $80 for a salad.
It's a really nice. It's a really nice hole.
Really
in the
nice
wall.
Hole in the wall.
But I mean, you know, it kind of feels like a hole in the wall. It's like it's yeah. Anyway,
dude, Willie's is a hole.
We had the yeah, that's right. Willie's is. But I had the Kangaroo Burger. That was like the special burger that they had on that week, and I took it. And within 20 minutes, I was like, oh no, this is not digesting. So I took a bunch of your enzymes. And like 30 minutes later, I felt totally fine.
Yeah.
Or you just digested it yourself.
Because yeah.
you hadn't absorbed the enzymes yet, probably anyway.
Placebo.
Yeah. I wish you guys knew me when I was taking tobramycin in my mask, because that shit tastes so nasty.
Oh,
it's gross.
Yeah. I know what you're experiencing now. Mm-hmm. Now that I've had this drug.
Yeah, it's gross, and it stays in your mouth.
Yeah, it's yucky. It's like you're just on, you know, the fence, the cold fence. That taste, that metallic.
Yeah,
horrible. Yeah, it's terrible. Good way of putting
it. When someone gives you change and you take the change and you put it in your mouth
and you lick it,
and then your mouth is like sawdust.
Mm.
Like,
you guys want to hear something fucked? Bad. Okay, oh, sorry. You just reminded me of something so crazy. This is so off track. Do you guys remember Pancake Day?
Yeah.
Okay.
At Pancake school? Tuesday.
I think it's like a Roman Catholic thing.
In February.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I don't remember that.
Well, anyway,
we were
Roman Catholic
right,
growing up.
Oh, but it happened in school.
We did it at home. I don't know. I don't think we ever had Pancake Day at school.
We did.
Okay, well, whatever.
But anyway.
He went to a boys' school. Catholic.
Only boys.
There's lots of those.
So the way it would work was my mom would make us pancakes. But it had something to do with, like, I think Christ has risen. Christ will come. Sorry. He got sucked in there. So it had something to do with Christ. And so what would happen is we would have pancakes for breakfast. Or no, we'd have pancakes for dinner. And
do you want to sing a hymn?
Here's the crazy part about this. My mom would, you would find, like, little surprises in your...
I used to find quarters.
Yes, dude.
Money. And I don't think it was sanitized.
I know.
That's the grossest thing.
Finding a toonie in my pancake, I was like, yeah! And
you know
take
what's
the
funny?
Pancake and like...
Is that one of the first lessons your parents probably ever taught you was don't put money in your mouth.
And then we had it in our pancakes. I had quarters for
but
sure.
But here, let me
different
bake
when you cook
it in.
It. Yes.
That's when gross.
That's right. Sick Boy Podcast will be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This has kind of been like the elephant in the room, I think, when you're talking about cancer anytime is like, what is like the life expectancy of a diagnosis like that?
That is a good question. And we don't know the true answer for me. Mm. It's so based on your genetics for my leukemia and most leukemias. They do this genetic analysis and that kind of gives you positive diagnostic or prognostic, like life expectancy stuff, or negative. And when my genetics were tested, all of mine were favorable. So they think probably about, I think it's around 16 to 20 years. But then my thought and most of our thought is that by that time, there'll be completely new therapies for what I have. So I'll still have second line and third line, and I hope I don't ever have to get to a bone marrow transplant, but they are wonderful therapies with their risks. But I think it's always changing for leukemias or you know, diseases that are really highly researched. Mm. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on death and dying?
You know, after I listened, so Audrey Parker was an amazing human being, and I listened to your podcast, and I listened to basically everything that she talked about, and she was a brilliant person to listen to when you were thinking about death and dying and when you're facing death and dying. And I don't think I have any fears about death. And I think when you're going through something like chemo or you have a chronic disease and you've faced your own mortality, for some maybe it's really scary. And I've had the experience where I've been in a hospital bed next to a man in his last days with lung cancer. And he was terrified to die. And I felt really sad for him because he was in his last days on this earth in the life as he knew it, and he was terrified to die. And I was thinking, I don't feel that way at all. And there's been times when I've been in hospital in the past few months that I thought, I think I'm going, like, there was one day I thought, I'm definitely going to die. Like, I can't imagine not having these fevers anymore and feeling like I'm not on fire in my brain. And I was okay with it. And I think it's a beautiful thing to be okay with, because life doesn't just stop when you stop living here. And we all have our own belief systems. And I think you don't have to be a spiritual person, and you don't have to have this multi-level conscience to understand death and dying. You just have to have your own peace with it to be okay mm-hmm. with what's coming. And I think that takes a lot of anxiety out of it.
Do you think, especially in those about that older gentleman who was in his last days.
Oh, it was so sad.
Being so afraid. You know, like that's not a way to live. Like, that is not life.
No.
You're not living if you're living in just this constant state of fear.
Yeah, and he suffered more because of that.
So much
he
more.
Wouldn't take the medications to relieve his anxiety yeah. and his fears, yeah. which weren't going to kill him and put him to sleep. They were going to help settle his symptoms mm-hmm. and I think because he was so afraid of letting go of control, which we all are,
of course,
whether in varying degrees, the hardest thing to let go of in death and dying and illness is control.
Yeah. Do you think that when you said that, you know, you couldn't imagine not having this fever, and you couldn't imagine do you mean that you are so deep into this sensation of what this feels like, it just feels like the likelihood that this will ever change for the positive is basically nil, and it's going to kill me?
Yeah, I think I didn't really tell people that at the time, because you don't like to wear the anxiety of others when you have your own stuff going on. And I think that's why a lot of people don't like people around when they're having a really mm-hmm. hard time or they're in chemo or whatever. But for me, it was just so bad. And it was lasting for days. Despite those really hardcore antibiotics, I was not getting better. And I thought, if these can't do it, like, what is going to stop this? And I think I thought about a lot of stuff in those few days that I never really said out loud before, but I was okay with it. Mm-hmm. I've only been living for 36 years, but it's been a really awesome life.
I'm relating this to in one way, and I'm fucking checking off a bingo card for somebody, a sick boy bingo card, because I'm going to mention getting
Brazil.
Fucked up in Brazil.
Yeah.
And because that was a moment for me when I, like, in that short period of time that I was affected by whatever the fuck that was, a skin condition, I accepted death in the way that I was in such a state of panic from a very acute.
He had an ant, a fire ant, it bite him on the head of his penis.
That's a different time.
oh.
No, I'm not talking about that.
Oh, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about the sun. I'm talking about the burn and the aloe and the skin reaction that I had.
Right, yeah.
And it was so intense that I was like, there's two options. I'm either going to go crazy and I'm going to be crazy for the rest of my life, or I'm going to die. And there was like an acceptance of that because it was so intense. So the intensity of that moment, I'm trying to relate to mm-hmm. your experience of going, well, I am so deep into this discomfort mm-hmm. that I'm just letting go. I'm going, if this is what it's going to be, then I'm good.
Well, sometimes don't you think we all become acceptant of things that we once thought were impossible? And mm-hmm. then when you go through a variation of what you thought was impossible, you become more accepting of it. Like, for me, I was like, oh, I could never deal with a parent dying. And then my parent died. And I thought, oh, okay, I deal with that. And then you think, I could never deal with getting cancer. And then you get cancer. You're like, okay. And you're always kind of setting these new benchmarks for acceptance. And yes, there are times when you think, I can't do this one. But you actually
That's how I feel about root canals. I'm like,
oh, no, yeah, they're pretty bad.
I can't do a root canal.
They are.
And I won't do
awful.
Isn't that life, though? Like, isn't like going through experiences like that and then constantly like challenging yourself and extending the barriers of what you think is possible? Like,
I really just think we should just stay still and never push the boundaries and really just like accept that sit still.
In most cases, potatoes. Like, people will deal with the passing of their parents, right? And mm-hmm. like, and to me, both of my parents are still alive, but like, it does seem like a really challenging obstacle to overcome. But like, it's also statistically probably the experience that I'll have.
It kind of goes, it kind of relates to the conversation that we sort of ended with when we recorded last night, which was a conversation around how, what you're going through and the difficulty that you're going through is relative to your experience. So like, your challenging is different than my challenging because I haven't dealt with a serious illness. So what I find challenging to overcome is different from what you find challenging to overcome. And you, and let's just say, for example, that you look at my challenges when I'm going, oh, this is hard. And you go, well, it's not that hard.
But I won't, actually.
And which is good because it's relative.
It's relative. And that's so important as a physician too, that I've learned that through this process because it is super hard to listen to someone complain about their elbow when I can't sleep at night because I'm sweating through all of my sheets.
Right.
But it is all relative. So I have to appreciate and put myself in their shoes that that's important to them.
And what, how do you think this is going to change your practice?
Yeah. It will change me forever.
Yeah.
I think mostly how much I appreciate compassion when I am with a physician or a healthcare professional and how obvious it is when someone is lacking that. I've never not been a compassionate person, but it really, man, you learn a lot about compassion when you go through this kind of stuff. And I think not letting something sit on my desk for 8 hours or 2 days when I know someone is sitting at home waiting for that phone call, because I've been that person waiting at my house for 2 days for a phone call that never came when I was told it would happen. And it's really, really crappy when you just sit home waiting for news that someone doesn't care to give you, because not that they don't care, but they're too busy and they're caught up in their own treadmill. They never got around to it. I don't think I'll ever be able to do that to someone again.
Speaking of Audrey Parker and medical assistance in that episode on medical assistance in dying, like, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think that it's a brilliant way for people to express their own wishes for their own fate and what they want for the end of their lives. And I think it is so controversial in a lot of countries and here. And I think we've taken a long time to come to having these guidelines and this legislation. I certainly think there's a long way to go, and I hope that we're making headway for that. But I think it's a beautiful thing for someone to have control over their final moments of their life and to have that opportunity of choice, because you can, you think about all the other things you choose in life, and then when it's your final days, to not have that choice or to have it taken away from you for where it will be or on whose terms it will be, that's a pretty hard thing.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense. It doesn't really make sense why we wouldn't have that.
It
that
doesn't.
Ability, you know?
And I think it's a very futuristic part of medicine, and there's so many different things coming down the pipeline of medicine that I think are enabling choice and enabling people to be proactive for their own decisions, and that is a big part of healthcare, and we don't do enough of it as patients. We don't we're not proactive enough. Like we said earlier, your doctor will say, this is what we think is going on, this is the deal, and you say okay, thanks, and you leave. But I think it's really important to be an advocate for yourself, because half the time things wouldn't have happened or been found in me if I hadn't have advocated.
Yeah.
And you don't need to be a doctor to advocate.
No.
No.
No, absolutely not.
No.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said about, and again, it seems like every time we touch on patient advocacy, you're kind of trying to walk the fine line between you know, advocating for yourself because you deserve to have a voice in your healthcare, and also and then not kind of like trampling over like sound physician advice. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're always trying to walk that. Oh, fuck, I had a train of thought there and I totally lost it that I was going with.
I mean, I was with you that whole time.
Yeah, that was good.
It is important. Like, it is important to be able to stand up and speak for yourself, but also important to realize that your doctors know a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know everything. You need to remember that, but you also need to remember they know a lot.
Yeah, so I think my train of thought was somewhere along the lines of like, There is something to be said about your instinct and your feeling that something isn't right, or that things could be different. And we've heard no shortage of stories on the show where somebody said, you know, a doctor said this, and I said, well, okay, fine, I'm going to do my research and I'm going to talk to other people, and then that ended up saving their life.
we're never offended when people want a second opinion. Mm-hmm. I think it's so good to be curious, especially when there's so much information out there. Mm-hmm. So it's never an offense to say, hey, do you think you could ask your colleague or could I ask somebody else for an opinion if it doesn't jive with you or if you don't agree? Or not that you don't trust your physician, but maybe you're just looking for more input. There is nothing wrong
also,
with that.
Also, if it's something extremely serious, then does it really hurt to ask somebody else and get a second opinion?
No, it doesn't at all.
And like, you even did it yourself where, like, you looked at the information that you had and then you went to one of your friends and classmates to, like, find out if that aligned with kind of what you were thinking, too.
Yeah, and multiple physicians will have different opinions on the same thing or multiple ways to treat the same disorder. So it's always good to ask.
Yeah.
So bringing it back to your cancer and your experience, are you, where are you at now? Like what is the,
the 411?
Yeah. What's the 411?
Yeah. That's it's fresh because I just had an appointment yesterday.
Oh, fuck. Wow.
So I had my chemo stopped while I was in hospital about 2 weeks ago. And I should have just had my last round of chemo, during that time. And so what we decided in my appointment is we would be done with chemo because we think I'm in remission. And I should have had a bone marrow biopsy taken on Monday, which is when they kind of screw into the back of your hip and pull out
the
marrow.
That sounds really pleasurable.
It's the worst pain I've ever felt. And
so
I've had
I
didn't have it Monday because I've again gone neutropenic. So my cell counts are really low again right now, which is why I have hand sanitizer everywhere.
Sure.
So we have to wait to do that because my risk of infection is too high. So we don't know if I'm in remission. We hope I am, but my chemo is done for sure.
Do you know much about bone marrow donation?
I know a little bit, yeah.
Like how do you, Can you
if Bri was going to donate right now, what would that look like?
Yeah, so there is a bone marrow registry that you can become a part of, and they don't need to take a sample of your bone marrow to be on that list, like I need to give mine. Usually it's a swab of the inside of your cheek, and then that puts you into a worldwide database to be a donor if someone should need your bone marrow.
Man, so...
How do you donate it, though? How do you donate?
What I was about to say isn't about actually donating it. Well, it is about donating it, but not about the process. So I'll save it for after.
Yeah, is it hurdy?
I heard it hurts.
It would. Yeah. It's more of an investigation.
Not trying to deter anyone from doing it. You should do it.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful thing to donate your bone marrow. Pending, you could ever be a match for someone on this planet. It's amazing.
I can't though, right? Because I have CF.
Yeah, so there are a lot of reasons that people can't donate bone marrow, but there is an amazing podcast on bone marrow donation and on a story of someone matching another person to be a bone marrow donor.
Is he from here?
No, they're from the States, but it's an amazing story how this happened.
What's the podcast?
The podcast... The name, I have a bit of brain fog, I can't remember the name of it, but it's super,
God.
No, it's super easy to find. Yeah. No, it's not the answer. It's
the
chemo.
It sounds like Radiolab.
So
it's Radiolab. It is Radiolab.
Yeah.
It's Radiolab. And
we hate
you can
Radiolab.
Look it
we
up.
Actually can't, well, so we're going to have to cut this out. I don't
we love Radiolab. Okay. So I was in September, I rode in the Ride for Cancer and raised a bunch of money for our friend Brandon, who passed away in May, June. May or June.
This year.
and so we're at the whole event, super well organized. This is just a total shout out for Ride for Cancer because they did a fucking amazing job.
They're amazing.
And the event started, there was this like whole outdoor setup where everyone was kind of like getting coffee and breakfast and everything. And then you got shipped out to where you would start in Mahone Bay, but it all started in Halifax for the food and everything. It was this get together and like a rally and, you know, speeches and sponsor stuff and that sort of thing. And then, you know, this guy came up and he started telling a story about how he had cancer when it was like 1998, 97, 98, something like that. He was 40 years old. He was a firefighter. He had, I believe, leukemia. Through this miracle, he was matched with this guy in Germany for a bone marrow transplant. And he, through his cancer treatment, so he gets matched with this guy. He gets the marrow transplant. It's successful. and 20, and he couldn't go back to work, but he was thankful to be alive and everything. And 20 years later, his cancer comes back. So that was like, it was like 2 years ago his cancer came back. And then, so he said, I couldn't reach out to the guy directly because of, you know, regulation or whatever it was, but they eventually did circle back to the same dude in Germany. They contacted him, asked him to donate again. He donated bone marrow again, successful transplant of it. The guy who had cancer is again fine. And they took this dude and invited and flew this guy in from Germany to participate in the bike ride. It was like,
whoa,
dude, it was, everybody was bawling.
I saw
like,
the video.
Everybody
of it
was crying. Really? It was like the most heartwarming and touching, dude. Like me and Dave and Rich O'Coin were standing there like, bawling our eyes out at this guy who donated bone marrow to this guy twice over and the span of 20 years.
Dave Culligan did a video of it, and you can find it on his YouTube channel, I'm pretty sure. And it's like, I watched it, and it's a couple minutes long, but I was bawling at the end of it.
Yeah, you can just see me laying down the power in some scenes. Just laying it down.
All right. Well, that was a nice story until you brought that into it.
How do you really donate bone marrow?
Yeah. How do you do it?
You'd have to be matched.
But how do they take it out of you?
Yeah, they just pull it out, so, like they pull yours out?
No, so it's a different kind of a process. Because when you take it out of, say, my hip or the iliac crest is where they usually take it, it's a sample. So you're just taking kind of a chunk of it. Mm. Like there's a considerable hole in the back of my hip, which is super sore. It's a different process that's more of, think about it more with IV poles and that sort of thing, rather than taking holes out of your hips. And
juice, less hunk.
Yeah. And of course there's pain associated, but there's some beautiful people in the world too.
So you would find out what your type of bone marrow is, and then you'd be matched, and then you'd make the donation. Is that what you mean?
So you wouldn't necessarily find out what type of bone marrow you are, because it is matched based on genetic characteristics of what your cell is kind of like in a basic way. Mm-hmm. So you basically have to you give a sample of your cheek, like the inside of your cheek.
Oh, okay.
And then that goes into a huge database. And say if I needed a bone marrow transplant and I couldn't donate my own bone marrow for whatever reason, because you can donate your own bone marrow if it's appropriate.
That is so fucking trippy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you can have a donation. Then they basically go to the bone marrow registry all over the world and put in your kind of characteristics and see if it matches.
So it's all based on genetics. It's not like A, B, A, B, O.
I wonder how many people are on that database.
Yeah, I feel like the Radio Lab podcast does say that, and I should know that answer, but I don't. But there is a ton of people in that registry.
Yeah, wow.
That's amazing. Sign up.
Yeah.
It's amazing because it's not as if you have to say yes to do it.
Right.
I mean, it would be really hard to say no if you knew you could save someone's life, right?
Jesus. So that's a really amazing thing. I feel like everybody should sign up or want to sign up for it, because it's like you're not doing anything unless somebody really needs you to do it.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful thing to do, because it's not as if you're giving, you know, when you donate a kidney, you're one kidney down, which you can still function on one kidney for the most part. It's not like that. It's a whole different set of fish, but it's a beautiful thing, because you can actually save somebody's life and your life isn't really compromised.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the bone marrow that you donate, if you made a donation to somebody who needed it, would you just, how does that work? Is it like blood in the way that it'll just gradually just get it back?
Yeah, so I'm sure you'd be quite fatigued after, and I don't like to say I know how you'd be, because I've never given my bone marrow. Mm. But I think, you know, when you donate blood, you're tired, and you're not really, you're giving a pint of blood, you're not giving all that much of your own body.
They also give you a cookie.
You just blood, right? Didn't you say it was like 2 or 3 weeks until you've like get all of the blood back?
Well, you have to technically wait 56 days until like your good to go again and donate again. But they say it's a couple. It can be up to a couple of weeks until you feel like mm-hmm. totally normal again. But you're not allowed to do anything for 24 hours afterwards. And you were supposed to come with me, but you didn't.
Why? Why didn't you go?
Here we go. Mm-hmm. Hey, I can't donate blood, right? I have CF.
Yeah, I can't either.
Sweet. Yeah. Not sweet, but I got some hardcore phobias when it comes to intravenous needles, so I'm saying sweet.
We did do a shout-out on Instagram, too, and we're gonna announce, before this episode comes out, we would have announced a winner
of a
shirt for somebody else who went. There was, a bunch of people who...
There was a bunch.
Who went and donated.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, the turnout was pretty cool.
It's amazing how much blood we need, because... In the world of blood cancers, a lot of people going through chemo and not going through chemo need multiple transfusions of blood, because you become so anemic because your bone marrow can't produce all the cells it needs
to. Have you needed one?
I haven't needed one, which is...
Is that a surprise?
Yeah.
Oh.
I was a bit surprised. Because you talk to the people next to you during chemo, you get quite used to the people on your cycle.
Right.
And often the people with me on either side or across the room, you know them, and they often have a red bag hanging beside them of blood. But
they're doing it at the same time as the chemo?
You don't do it at the same time, but they would come in, say, to get blood, and I'd be coming in for iron or, you know, a checkup or something.
What's your blood type?
My blood type's AB.
Okay. Can you get my blood? I'm A positive.
No.
Okay.
Can your blood drop into
people? So if you were O,
people?
I could have O.
O is like...
O is the universal donor for O's.
Yeah, if you're owner. O, then you should be donating every 56 days. Oh, everybody should. Anyway,
it would depend on your plus or minus status.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you want to donate every 56 days?
A lot of people do.
Really?
Yeah. There are a ton of people... Cycle? So I do this thing with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society called Team in Training. And there we all run to fundraise to raise money for research.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the people who I run with give blood every 56
days. They're trying to, so when you go in to donate, they say, right before you even donate, the first thing they ask you is, are you good for me to book another appointment 56 days from now?
Oh, trippy. Did you have to book an appointment?
I don't know if you have to book an appointment. Really easy.
I didn't say it. You guys went into something else. But the reason I didn't go was just the reason why I'm sure tons of people don't go is life got in the way that day and I didn't go. But I should, and I will.
And a lot of people died because of it, Taylor.
One person did.
Do you have blood type O?
I don't know what my blood type is. Okay. I have given blood before, but it was a long time ago and I can't remember.
If they weren't on you please do this again in 56 days, it probably wasn't O.
I feel like it was I think it was in high school.
Oh,
I think
right.
I gave it in high school.
That was the last time?
I think so,
You're
yeah.
due.
It was 10 years ago.
You are due.
Yeah, it was more than 10 years ago because it was in grade 10.
I'll give you a t-shirt if you give blood.
No, you give me a t-shirt?
Well, we went to the same high school.
Well, fuck, that's all you had to say.
Yeah, I'll give you a t-shirt.
Well, they didn't say that at the blood clinic. They were giving me a t-shirt.
No, they don't. They give you a cookie, but she'll give you a t-shirt.
But I'll give you a t-shirt.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Well, then I'll definitely do it.
They give you chocolate milk and Oreos.
What? Dude.
I brought you Oreos.
Oh, you did? That's where they came from?
Yeah.
You didn't eat your Oreos? They probably give you Oreos because they're like, yo, you need some fucking sugar in your body.
That's right.
They're probably like, we just took your blood. Have some sugar, please. And you're like, no. I'm going to CrossFit.
All right. So, well... I feel like this has been a really fantastic conversation, I'm really excited for you to return to your practice.
Yeah, me too.
Because I think the highlight for me of this conversation was hearing how this experience has changed the way that you view going back to work.
I cannot wait.
Yeah.
To go back to work.
Yeah, there's something really uplifting and beautiful about that. And you know, unfortunate that it had to be such a hardcore scenario for glean that lesson. But
is that the same for almost everything though?
I think that's it. Yeah, that is it. That really, for the most part, it is.
It's like you wouldn't be here. Like You wouldn't be who you are, or that piece of you that I love wouldn't be that piece if you weren't, if you didn't.
Yeah, that Brian has tattooed on his chest.
Yeah.
It's like the more profound the challenge, the more profound the lesson that you learn.
There you go. Right. Yeah. Oh, the one that's, that you have tattooed on the small of your back.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Just below the butterfly.
Before we do wrap it up, I do want to ask you about this. I find this really interesting. So I was mentioning I had a hemicolectomy last year.
Mm-hmm.
And, in the process, so the surgeon took out 75% of my large intestine.
Mm-hmm.
It's super wild to me that I don't have an ostomy. And in that process, I lost my gallbladder as well. They had to take it out. So long story short, when I came out, my parents, there was a lot going on. My parents had heard, his gallbladder was gangrene, and so we had to take it out. My parents were like, "Holy fuck, that's crazy!" And so then that's what I heard. I heard, "Oh yeah, your gallbladder was gangrene, Jared. They took it out. You know, it's not a vital organ, so like you're good." Okay, cool. Sew me up. Surgery went well. Aside from
serious
that,
shot.
And then I'm
aside from 75% of my bowel.
Everything's good.
Yeah.
6 weeks later, I go back to see the surgeon, and I sit down, and she's the coolest. Like, she's so down to sit down and have like a 45-minute chat, and I'm asking all these questions. Like, mm-hmm. she's wicked.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, "Oh, can I ask you? Tell me about the gangrene gallbladder." And she's like, "Oh yeah. So it wasn't actually gangrene. I was in there and I was like clamping some stuff and moving stuff around. And then all of a sudden I started to see that your gallbladder started to like change color before my eyes. Like it started going green on the inside, you know, sort of, layer." And she called this, specialist down to come take a look. And she's like, what do we do here?" And the guy was like, "Oh, that gallbladder's fucked. You got to remove it. It's got to go." So she's like, "All right." And she was like, what happened was as I was clamping to like move parts of your, you know, abdominal wall or whatever, or shift organs apart, she had nicked my gallbladder and like tore the inside, layer, which punctured it. And
it all seeped out.
All the bile started to seep out. So when she told me, I was like, "What? That is wild." And then all of a sudden I was like, "Are you supposed to be telling me this? Like, is this potentially a risk for you to tell me? Like, if I was the type of person that
did
was
you
like,
say that?
I'm going to, no, I didn't say that. I didn't care. I thought it was fascinating.
But did you say that in interest, like in curiosity? No, were you like, are you at risk?
No, I didn't. I didn't at all. Cause I didn't even want her to think that I was like, maybe going to like go, I'm going to fucking sue you.
But that's how you would have said it too.
That's how I would have said it.
I'm fucking sue you.
but my question is like, if I was a different person, like,
who would fucking sue?
Yeah, who would fucking sue? Could I have, did she put herself at risk in telling me that, or?
She probably on the consent form that you signed to have your surgery.
Yeah, like before they wheel me in there and knock me out.
So we have we have to disclose risks that are of a certain percentage.
Right.
And so we put on there damage to surrounding structures during the surgery. And that could be incorporated.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know if she put that, but probably.
Probably.
And to be fair, that could be, if she had clamps in that area, then that could be damage to surrounding structure.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
So there was probably something on your consent form, but you probably don't remember what the risks of it were.
I didn't even read the fucking
form.
No, I don't read it.
Terms and conditions on an Apple product. I mean, come on.
I didn't read it. I mean, literally, it's like, I should have read it, but.
And full disclosure is super important.
I loved that she told me that
that's
story.
That's very important. Yeah.
I think the only people who read those are lawyers, and then they get really anal about it, and they start striking things out, and they're like, "I'm going to sign this, and this doesn't count anymore.
Dude, every single lawyer I know talks like that.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Yeah,
weird.
Even our lawyer.
It's like,
I hope he doesn't listen to the podcast.
Like,
parents talking like that.
Yeah, my brother-in-law talks like that too.
Yeah, I know. It's Pat, so weird. Yeah. What the fuck's up with Pat?
I know.
Lawyer speak.
All right. Well, thank you, Tanya. Thanks for coming
thank you.
In and sharing this experience with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's always nice to have a doc sit across from a couple of dopes like us.
And even a non-working doc.
Yeah, well.
I'm second-class citizen
you're
still, now.
You're just a plebe now.
You're just a plebe.
Like us.
And thank you all so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week, as we always are, with a fantastic episode. And in the meantime, it would mean the world to us.
Will we be back next week?
Yeah. Every week. Every Monday.
I know it's Christmas.
Yeah, but Christmas is long ago, my friend. Christmas happened a few weeks ago.
Oh, fuck, dude. I'm in the future right now.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, shit.
We are literally in the future.
Wow, that's fucking crazy.
So in the meantime, head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating and a review and hit the subscribe button and tell all of your friends that you did that, because it would just help us stay up on the charts and means a lot to us. And there's other ways you can support us as well.
Man, and since we're in the future right now, I am now retroactively thanking everybody for our Patreon Christmas present, where you went and donated to our Patreon page. Thank
and gave,
you guys.
Gave blood.
Oh, and gave blood. Yeah. I mean, give to Patreon first, obviously. But then go down to your blood donation clinic and donate blood. They give you a t-shirt if Tanya's there. And yeah. They'll give you cookies yeah. if she's not.
You can download the Give Blood app. It's like really, really easy to give blood if you do that.
I mean, but... Patreon.com/sickboy.
Or yeah. Giving Blood's key.
How's the Give Blood app work? You plug the phone into your arm and then press a button and then...
Just takes it like that?
Just takes it right into the phone.
Wow, yeah. That's cool.
That's fucking... Man, yeah. The future is crazy.
I told you, we're in it now.
You know what? I didn't get to talk about CrossFit yet today, so I'll just use this opportunity to talk about it right now.
I think you did. You said training instead of treatment.
I just heard you say WOD and AMRAP three times, like, to yourself.
So I had gone from doing a WOD straight to donating blood, and usually it takes me, like, around the 10 to 15-minute mark to donate. I filled that thing in 5 minutes.
Oh, so everyone should join CrossFit.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, you can get blood faster.
That's because you're not fit enough yet, and your recovery time is horseshit, so your heart rate didn't come down.
Jesus, guys.
I didn't... My heart rate was down. And there was somebody else from the gym there donating blood at the same time. So, you know what? If you go to a CrossFit gym, there's probably
friends.
Lots of good people there donating blood, too.
Oh.
Great.
And it's really interesting that Donovan chose to add Christmas music to this part of the show, because Christmas was
really? Because I didn't hear that. All I heard were fucking weights hitting the ground and dudes grunting.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
I can do the sound effects for that. We don't even need Donovan for that.
And thank you to Take Part for the theme music. Take Part in this.bandcamp.com. And you can actually, like, if you go there, you can hear other songs by them too that are really good.
They have some jams, yeah. Just stop it. Just get out of here. That is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
I'm Jeremy.
I'm Tanya.
And this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.